Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony, I would point this out. Of the six underdogs Jeff has taken so far this season, five have won outright. So with three three-point dogs, there's a nice little money line parlay opportunity there.
We think Jeff is good. And yeah. the podcast... Yeah,
how am I doing versus the monkey so far?
You're beating the monkey.
Monkey's 500.
Yeah, monkey's 500. You're plus three. You're crushing the monkey at the moment.
At the moment.
You're
at the moment.
The monkey. But it's a long... It could be seven.
Yeah, it's a long season.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Well, at this moment, he's plus two. Because he took the Jets plus three. The game ended four. Mm. Cleveland won the game covering by just 1 point. Chuck Todd got that right, though he was terribly reluctant to go with Cleveland. And Jeff Ma got that wrong. We are live at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Streets Northwest. Very nice crowd for breakfast. Thank you for coming in.
Morning.
Applaud yourselves. Gary Braun is here. Meteorologist to the stars, Kevin Sheehan, is here. Podcast boy Kevin Sheehan,
yes,
with his daily podcast. Now Michael Kornheiser's here. Nigel will run the board.
The gift givers were lined up this morning.
Yeah, we got. Well, so I'm going to talk about the gifts right now from Chris McFarlane and his family of Sylvie, Jacob, Abby, and Ellie. Our family is very excited to make the TK pilgrimage to the DC area and see and hear the podcast recorded live at Chatter. We're taking the kids out of school this week to align it with a Blue Jays game in Baltimore and a Nats home game. We convinced ourselves the trip to your nation's capital would be educational for the kids, and what fits that description better than listening to a monkey pick football games against a spread? Chris is from Orangeville, Ontario, and gave us Canadian treats. And I looked at them and I said, these are just potato chips. And he says, yes, but they're covered in ketchup. Do you have that in America? And then another bag of potato chips is completely dressed.
They weren't covered in ketchup. They were ketchup flavored.
Whatever.
Yeah. Coated in ketchup.
Whatever.
Yeah, they were
so
in the bag.
He says, you'll find an assortment of Canadian treats and a new sign to add to the collection. Maybe now Nigel can focus less on resetting the board to zero and more on pushing the buttons or whatever it is he does. Most, if not all, of these junky treats are not available in the United States. And while you do have maple syrup, this is the best you can get from Quebec. Please share it all with everyone there or throw it into the prize closet. That's very, very nice. We also, from Craig Petrosky in Granville, Ohio, from my maiden voyage from Granville, Ohio to Chatter, D.C., I come bearing tribute for you and the gang. Copies of my pal Doug Chilewa's book, Cat Butt Scratch and Sniff.
I don't know about that. Related to Ed Butt, maybe?
I don't know. I hope you and or the cat butt lovers in your lives enjoy this timeless tale of simply illustrated and lightly scented feline buster.
No, it's just terrible.
I don't know if that's for Bootsy. That may be a little bit too adult.
Where's Granville, Ohio? Do we know that?
Oh, yeah. It's where Denison is.
Denison College or University?
Denison University.
Yeah. We want to say hi to Jake in Saudi Arabia. Can I do this, please?
Of course.
Yeah, I want to, because Jeannie Broderick told me about this. Jake, who's a little in Saudi Arabia, who had an accident, a diving accident, and lost part of a leg, and is being fitted for a prosthetic leg at this point, and is a huge little, and we're happy that Jake is better and getting better and in Saudi Arabia. Football tomorrow here at Chatter, all day, all night, college football. Football all day, all night, Sunday here at Chatter. Can't get this anywhere else. That's a lie, but I thought I would say that. And football at night on Monday night. Then let us get to the beginning of the show, which is in fact about football. When the Cleveland Browns had the first pick, the overriding opinion of almost everybody in the world, including myself, was they will do something to get it wrong because they always do. Although the kid they drafted the year before, they didn't get it wrong, right?
Yeah. Miles Garrett is good. He's a monster.
Right, they didn't get it wrong with him. But they picked Baker Mayfield, and I know Wilbon hates Baker Mayfield and has decided that Baker Mayfield is Johnny Manziel. And he has said this time and time and time again, that he's problematic, that he's a jerk, that nobody wants him. Well, maybe that pick looks like a good pick. Today, that pick looks like a good pick. Tyrod Taylor was faltering in the game and then got hit pretty hard. And Baker Mayfield, late in the first half, down 14-0 or 7-0.
14-0.
14-0 at the time, came in and got them to a field goal. Now, he got very lucky in one regard. He got the ball stripped, and one of his offensive linemen picked it up and went about 8 or 9 yards. And so they retained possession there. And then Baker Mayfield got hot, and by the end of the game, I didn't stay for the whole end of the game, but by the end of the game, Cleveland had won that game. In the second half, he took them to 2 touchdowns. What kills Jeff Ma and boosts Chuck Todd is the 2-point conversion. If they don't make that, Cleveland still wins, but the Jets cover.
Yeah, more that's, likely than not. It may have ended up being a push. Because if they had not gotten the two-point
right.
conversion,
well, no, they went for two.
It would have been 14-12. And when they got the next touchdown, they would have, at 17-12, would have gone right. for the two-point conversion.
Right.
Might have been a push.
So what you had out on the field, and you don't often see this in the third game of the season, the number one and number three draft picks from last season at quarterback were both out on the field. Sam Darnold had a not much of a game at all for the second straight week. He was great in his first, which gives you a little bit of pause about Baker Mayfield. And
he looks pretty good, though,
week.
Tony.
Well, he
looked
very good. I think he threw for 300 yards against
Miami. He looked very
Miami.
Good. So Darnold was 15-31 for 169, which is nothing special at all.
Two picks.
Here's what I thought. And I watched it when I watched Mayfield, and I'll turn this over to everybody else. I thought, it's Griffin. Like, this is how you felt. If you're Cleveland,
exactly.
This is how you felt in Washington the first time you saw Griffin and you were welcome to the world of infinite possibility. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it's just now with hindsight, we know what Griffin turned out to be.
That's
but
right.
yes,
That's
the excitement
the
of
moment.
His first throw, it was electric, Tony, when he came in and he throws to Landry
Zips
and
it.
The place lights up.
Zips it.
And let me point out, that was after Tyrod Taylor had gone 4 of 14
Couldn't
for 19 yards.
Oh, I thought it was 2 for 11.
Okay.
It was 1.2 for 11. For 11.
Yeah. Right.
But I thought he looked great, and Gary and I were just talking about it. He actually throws a great ball. He's a little guy.
He's a little bit under 6 feet. He's Drew Brees'
right.
size.
Right. He looks
he's
like
bigger
Brees.
Than Russell Wilson, but he's Drew Brees' size.
And he is confident.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
he is
evident.
Very, he's got Luke Russert confidence, it seems to me. He's extraordinarily confident. So he ends up going 17-23 for 201.
Pretty good
with
in his first
with
game.
With
no
a few drops in there.
No
about four drops.
I mean, he hit Jarvis Landry literally between the numbers once. Callaway dropped one yeah. over the shoulder. I mean, he could have easily been 19 or 20
what
or
did you
23.
Think? What did you think?
I thought it was almost predictable. When Tyrod Taylor goes out and it's 14-0 and you see him grab the helmet and jog on the field, I thought, and so it begins. So he comes on, he leads them to victory, and the Baker Mayfield era has begun.
They're not sitting him down next game.
I mean, if Hugh Jackson wants to get fired, maybe.
Oh, no, he's the...
He's
well, Jackson,
there's no possibility
Jackson was
of that.
Non-committal last
yeah.
night. I don't know why
well, that's
he would
stupidity.
Be.
Yeah. Come on.
He's it.
He's the starter. And how about just that people got excited about watching the Jets and the Browns on Thursday Night Football?
Yes.
I was into it as a football yeah. fan.
Yes, a total dog game when you saw it on the schedule.
Yeah.
But with what has happened with the Browns, who should be 2-0 if they had a competent place kicker, they'd now be 3-0.
Well, it's
right?
it's
yes.
it's much tougher to stay with if Tyrod Taylor does not get injured. Because it wasn't wasn't
but,
a good game,
but
really, at that point.
But. You could sense. I mean, Buck and Aikman kept on saying, we're watching the sideline. This was before Taylor
yeah.
got hurt.
Yeah.
They're waiting with the throws that he's sailing over people's heads. It was only a matter of time. It seemed like it was going to be right
for Mayfield
last night.
I wonder what the number was like on that game.
What do you mean?
In terms
the
of no, in terms of the audience.
Oh, oh. I bet it did pretty well last night.
But to Tony's point, it's never going to be as high as when it starts.
But it's New York.
And yeah,
which helps.
Yeah, but it's the second New York
yeah,
team.
It's the Jets.
It is not the Giants. The Jets are nowhere near the draw that the Giants are. So also, and I would say this,
and Cleveland's still there, right? As of last reports, the city,
it's still there.
There. Okay,
still there.
Good. Fast College Park
it's by
could
that
be
lake.
Gone.
Who's the brilliant guy at Bud Light? Who's that guy?
Dilly Dilly.
It's not just the Dilly Dilly, which are wonderful commercials.
Would you like some mead?
They locked up. Is it an autumnal mead? Bit of misery. No, they locked up a whole bunch of coolers in Cleveland waiting for the first win whenever it came out with Bud Light cans, I think, that were going to be given out free. They got enormous amounts of publicity for whatever that
and
cost
And they're lucky
them.
It was a Thursday night.
Yeah, they got
that was a weekend?
Right, then Cleveland.
There was a guy at
well,
the end
was
of the game.
It was the weekend last night for them.
Yeah. You were, I'm sure, in bed, Bekev, you probably saw it. There was a dude in the stands holding a sign that simply said, open up the coolers, dilly dilly.
Right. Well,
that's what Mayfield said after the game, dilly dilly to Cleveland.
That's, you know, that whole campaign is really good. I'd started out and I thought, what is this? It's no, but it's really good. It's really good. One other note that I wanted to mention. I did watch a bunch of the Nats last night, back and forth. I was disappointed that Scherzer gave up runs early, but he ended up 7 innings, right? And
13 strikeouts.
He's going to get 300 strikeouts. He's not going to get 20 wins. He gets off the hook. This is, I think, the third of the last four starts where he left losing, but he got off the hook. But there was a moment in the 8th inning. I think they're down 3-2 in the 8th inning. They've got two on and nobody out or one out. And Harper is up. and the other team brings in a lefty. Just did you see this, Michael?
At this point, I was in and out of the game.
Okay, so brings in a lefty to pitch to Harper. And there's all the drama about Harper and whether or not this is the last time that we will see Bryce Harper in this particular uniform on this homestand. And Harper works the count, and it's either 1-2 or 2-2, but he's fouled off a couple of pitches, and he's swinging very, very hard, and he's getting the bat on the ball. On this particular pitch, if it was a 1-2 count, it was still the 7th or 8th pitch of the at-bat. He hits it, and he stands there, and everybody gets up. And he stands there, but he knows he didn't get all of it. It goes to the warning track, maybe right to the wall. It's the story of the season for the Washington Nationals. They came very close. He came close to the home run, which I think would have given him 3 runs. I think that would have given him 100 RBI. Because he's going to get 35 and 100, and he's going to get money at a lot of places. But in that moment, and I just landed on it by chance because I'm going back and forth, bottom of the 8th. And I didn't even know they went to extra innings till this morning. But in that moment, you said to yourself, that's their season. The highlight of their season is his home run in Home Run Derby. That's the high. It's not what happened on the field. It's that. And then, of course, the manager, oh, I'm so proud of them. They work so. No, stop. Please stop with that. I don't want to hear it. Did you see that?
I didn't watch any of it.
Not you didn't even go back and forth?
No, I was on
the football.
Do you
know what was really bad?
It's a meaningless game. They're not in the race anymore.
I understand, but I have
the third inning,
Harper's final 7
after the second after the second home run. These are two opposite field shots Scherzer's given up, which he tends to do. He gives up home runs early. Carpenter starts to say, "Well, it's a human night. Ball's really flying." No. I was walking back from getting dinner. Beautiful.
It wasn't humid at all.
Not humid.
There was a breeze. If you want to say anything, say the breeze pushed it out.
35% relative humidity.
You should be angry at that. He's coming at you.
Depends on what
you're
a
meteorologist of a sort.
It was not humid last night.
It was not.
Not by DC standards.
Humid to him. Yes.
So I mean, it's everything is an excuse, an excuse, an excuse. That's the way it works around here. But I think I'm pretty confident now. And I love Scherzer. Scherzer is worth the money.
The team broke.
This is not the Cy Young. Yes, he's been shattered by this team. And this is he's playing it out now.
It was that Atlanta start, the second, first or second week of August.
Is it my book, my dog book? Scherzer's in the dog.
Yes, I have it.
Okay.
Yes. But where he had he left with the lead, and they lost the game in the 9th. They couldn't hold.
This is, all right, we'll get out of here. Yes? How is our internet working? It's not working?
It's still not working, but we're finding a way to get the show done.
Wonderful.
Where there's a will, right?
Yeah, I guess. We will come back. We will have... What one? We have Anne Hornaday.
Anne Hornaday, that's
she
right.
She only has a couple of movies, but she's got the big Jane Fonda story.
Yes, Jane Fonda.
She's a complete fangirl on Jane Fonda, right? I mean, complete fangirl. Who wouldn't be at this point? All right. We'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Indochino ad. We haven't done this in a while. Ooh. And highlighted, it says, talk about how the company is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. Well, what am I supposed to say after that? The company is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. First it says, it doesn't want me to talk about how made-to-measure suits fit better compared to generic off-the-rack suits. It doesn't want me to talk about my personal experience with Indochino when I go to Nigel, who's bought these suits.
Yes,
it doesn't want me to talk about how every man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit, which is
true.
What
does it want you to talk about, though?
That the company is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos.
All right.
Why don't you tell your story of your suits?
I needed a suit. I got a recommendation to get an Indochino suit. I was a bit dubious. It was like, order it through the internet, but I measured my... It says, you measure yourself. It's legendary
ball
now.
Ball of string.
Yeah, it's a ball of string and a yardstick.
Yeah.
I did it. My measurements came out perfectly. It's the best suit I've ever owned. I've purchased 2 more.
That's it.
That's how much I love them.
Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. We make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys, I love when people say guys. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from and the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, your lining, your pockets, your buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. You visit a stylist at our showroom. There aren't that many showrooms, to be fair. And have them take your measurements personally, or you measure at home, as Nigel did. And you shop online at Indochino.com. You choose your fabric inside and out. You choose your design customizations. You submit your measurements with your choices. And you relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. A couple of weeks.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah, it's very quick.
This week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering TK at checkout. And that's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, the shipping is free. That is Indochino.com. Let me spell it for you. Indochino.com. The promo code is TK. Oh, it's not Tony. It's TK. Good. And that's easier. TK. It's easier than Tony. It's less misspelled.
How do you spell that? Less.
I would just suggest you spell it TK.
And, Dad, there is a Indochino showroom 1.7 miles from this studio
really?
In Bethesda.
Oh, yes. Fantastic. Then anybody local can go to Bethesda.
Andy yes. Poley's there.
Any yes. premium
well,
suit.
Not for $359 a suit. Yeah,
$359 and free shipping.
Yes.
It's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino also expanding into casual clothing. Made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant. Pant. That's how Michael says it. Michael says short and pant. And, you know, panting to me is the dog. Pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do with a sweater, and they'll be good any time of year for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches, which we have here at Chatto.
Yes.
Chatter. Chatto. Boy. Indochino's at an introductory price of $79, and it says U.S. or is that us?
That'd be
$79 U.S.
Yes. Yeah.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a Delaware band called Edgewater Avenue. And this is a song called Love Song. You know, it's a Delaware band? George Thorogood.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Delaware Destroyers,
yeah.
right?
George Thorogood is, I think, the number one Delaware band.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Would you say, I guess the number one Delaware person is still Joe Biden. But Elena yeah. Deladon, I think, is high.
She's
got to
be high
higher
this,
on
right?
it. I think
what about Joe Flacco,
I think
hon?
I think Elena Deladon is top three right now.
Is Flacco from Delaware? I know he
played at Delaware.
I think he's from Wilmington.
Do you think so?
I think so.
Okay. Anyway, Edgewater Avenue in Delaware. Thank you very much for that. Ann Hornaday gets played in. Ann Hornaday. And there's a big box of something here for you.
Oh, yeah. We opened that yesterday. The person who gave that is actually here. I think it's... And what were the names? It was Gay and Jeff?
Jeff Follinsby. Yes. Is he at Chatter today?
What is in the box, Ann?
Might a box.
Oh, all sorts of wonderful things from the beautiful people at Chautauqua Institution.
Are you...
Where I spent most of a wonderful week in August.
Oh, dog. There's
oh,
a dog
no,
frisbee,
there's
a,
something for dogs. Oh, yeah, teaching old dogs new tricks since 1874. Whoa, that's great. Yeah, cool. That's great. Okay,
it's
so
lovely.
Are you donating the box to the listeners of this podcast, or are you keeping the box, which is fine?
I'm gonna keep. Excuse me. I think we're going to
keep the box.
Divvy it up.
Because I'm gonna charge rent if I see this here another day.
History
get it out of here.
History will remember this moment as the day we turned on you.
Yes, it's all fun and games until merch is involved.
That's right. Let's talk. We have a couple of movies. Let's talk about them. And then we'll talk about Jane Fonda. You're such a fangirl for Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. The first movie is called Blaze. It is apparently written and directed by Ethan Hawke. And it's possible I've missed on Ethan Hawke. All my life, I thought of Ethan Hawke basically as a Johnny Depp without all the publicity. As somebody who's okay, but sort of overrated and not that important. But it may be that I'm wrong about that. I may be wrong. What do you think?
I think you are wrong, and I think this year is the year. I mean, he's been doing consistently really good work for the past several years, I think. But this year, he's just had such a great run. I mean, he was incredible in the Paul Schrader movie, First Reformed.
Mm-hmm.
A great performance that I really hope gets recognized at awards time. And then he did, I think... You know, we all kind of mourn the death of the rom-com, but there's this perfectly delightful little rom-com that opened late in the summer called Juliet Naked, based on a Nick Hornby novel, which is our generation, reference-wise, where he plays a kind of aging rocker, a cult figure, kind of this, you know, that this other guy is obsessed with. And now he's directed this movie about that very kind of cult figure, the real-life Blaze Foley, who was a singer-songwriter who was a contemporary of Townes Van Zandt and hung around Austin and was really on his way up and then was tragically killed in 1989. But Ethan has really done a great job directing this movie about him. And but he's done great work. You know, he played Chet Baker a couple of years ago.
Yes, the guitarist.
And he did a wonderful job with that. He directed a fantastic documentary called Seymour, An Introduction, about a pianist and piano teacher. And, you know, boy, I thought his performance in Boyhood
was good.
Was
it was fine.
Splendid.
I guess my feeling about him is, I'm, you know, sort of the sort of being overpraised and stuff like that. The one thing that I will say about Ethan Hawke, and I don't watch his movies as closely as you do, But I do think that he is almost unrecognizable in movies. In other words, it's not like Robert De Niro, who as soon as he comes on the screen, you go, well, that's Robert De Niro, no matter what
that's
he tries
true.
To do. Ethan Hawke, it would seem to me, at least gives the illusion of becoming the character, whoever the character is. And that's another
that's
Johnny Depp
point.
Thing for me. You know,
I think that's a very good point. And, you know, he was always super handsome and boyish. And now he's got these wonderful crags and lines on his face, and he's just, you know, he's aging just beautifully, and it's giving him much more expressivity and the ability to disappear, like you said. He was even, I mean, I think he was probably ultimately miscast in that little movie Maudie, but he did a good, you know, he did a really good job with that role, and it was probably thanks to him that it even got made. And so I really applaud what he's doing with his power and his craft right now. I mean, he's really... He's just going for it, and mostly it's just turning out great. And this Blaze movie, especially for people that are interested, you know, Lucinda Williams fans will know the name because she wrote Drunken Angel about him, and Towns Van Zandt fans will know about Blaze. Mm-hmm. So those of us who are in that world, I think, will really, really enjoy this movie. It's beautifully made, beautifully acted by Charlie Sexton and Ben Dickey. And it's fascinating, so I liked it a lot.
I have to confess that whenever I hear the word Blaze in relationship to a movie, I think of Michael Keaton as Billy Blaze Jowski. What was that movie? It was not Splash, was it? No, it was the one with Henry Winkler. It was
Night Shift.
Night Shift.
And that was the first time I saw Michael Keaton and thought he was tremendous.
I think of Blaze Starr. That's how old I am.
Yeah, well, Blaze Starr was, she was a stripper, right? She was a stripper in Baltimore.
Of course.
That movie was called Blaze as well.
I on the block.
I think that movie was called Blaze as well.
Which?
Wasn't it? Wasn't there a movie on that?
With Paul Newman, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
but I think of Billy
Blaze.
Yeah, that's what I think of. All right, there's another, now I have another prejudice in this next movie. This is Fahrenheit 11-9, is that what it is?
Oh, yes.
This is a Michael Moore movie. I think of Michael Moore as a very mean person. And a slob, you know. And I see him interviewed, and the meanness just drips from him, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not saying his positions aren't well taken. I'm just saying that I think that as the front person for his positions, I think of him as being very, very mean. That doesn't mean all of his movies are. And God knows, he's gotten a tremendous amount of praise. Am I wrong on him too?
Well, no, I actually don't think you're wrong, and I think his persona, I mean, he's made himself the center of these movies. He has created a persona that we think of as Michael Moore, and, you know, he has to take responsibility for that, and I don't think you're wrong. And I think that this movie really epitomizes all of his strengths and most of his weaknesses as a filmmaker. You know, it's an invective against Trump. It's a call to arms about what to do to his followers. It cherry picks. It hyperbolizes. It exaggerates. It takes cheap shots. I mean, one of the most jarring moments is when he literally shows Hitler giving a speech and superimposes Trump's voice over the imagery, which I thought was just. You know, so I mean, it's like I don't know who he's hoping. In other words, you know, the choir that he preaches to will love it. And I don't think anybody else is ever going to go or ever be moved by it. And I'm not exactly sure how productive that is in terms of his greater mission.
All right, so let's get rid of that.
I think it's just grinding us back down into the tribalism that kind of got us here. And I don't think it's particularly well made. It's scattershot. It's rambling. I mean, like you said, though, he does, you know, one of his big focuses in the film is Flint and the water crisis there. And he's not wrong that is a disgrace and a scandal. But then he'll pull a stupid stunt like taking a, you know, he pulls these kind of camera-ready publicity stunts where he goes to the governor's house and sprays the lawn with Flint water. Well, what is that supposed to mean? You know, it's just kind of, he just undermines himself all the way through. So I was disappointed with this one.
We're leaving that aside. We're now going to talk about Jane Fonda. You sat down with Jane Fonda, who is now 80 years old. And I don't care how much surgery she's had. She's had the best surgery. She's
agreed.
Unbelievable. Now, seeing her in person, what does she look like in person?
Perfect. And not creepy perfect. I mean perfect for who she is. And her. She doesn't look, I mean, she's just exquisite. She glows. It's not just the bones and the, you know, the lifts and all of that. It's the
well, she has great genetics, though. Let's be fair. She comes from great
genes.
She
would say that. I think she would be the first to say good genes. And also good, you know, she's kept in very good shape all her life. I mean, I don't think she's treated herself very well. And in the movie, we were talking about this documentary that's going to be on HBO starting on Monday. Very candid, revealing, very emotional documentary. And she did suffer from bulimia for many years. So it's not like she's, you know, always treated herself all that well. But she's always kept in shape and done ballet and done exercise and, of course, the big aerobics thing. And I think it's just the way she carries herself. It's her attention to posture. It's her attention. Her skin is just silky and beautiful. And she does briefly touch on plastic surgery in the film, so I'm not speaking out of school here, but everything is just right, you know, and her hair is gorgeous. I mean, just everything about her is sensational. She's just absolutely sensational. And you know what else I think is her kind of secret sauce is that voice. It's that wonderfully husky, modulated voice. In this day and age of vocal fry and people talking like Minnie Mouse, I just adore the way she delivers, you know? I mean, she's just a very, very engaging person.
So as Warren Zevon might have said, I'd like to meet her surgeon. I mean...
totally. I came so very close to asking her.
You should have. She's had so many different acts in her life. She started out, and she's Henry Fonda's daughter, who was... I mean, if you think that Tom Hanks now is sort of the face of America in acting, Henry Fonda was certainly that for a long period of time. She started out, she was an ingenue, she was gorgeous and a very, very good actress. Then she was Hanoi Jane. She was reviled.
Yes.
She was reviled in this country.
Yep, still is.
Then she was the aerobics queen. Then all of a sudden you'd see her on all of these exercise videos. Then she went back into acting, and now it seems to me that she has outlived all of those things and now is sort of almost canonized, or are you telling me no, because of the Hanoi Jane?
I think it's fair, and I think she's it's interesting because the one, you know, the movie's organized around the men in her life, and so it starts with Henry, her father, who exerted such a huge influence on her in largely kind of just negative ways because he was very withholding and distant. And then her husbands, you know, she had Roger Vadim, who kind of personifies the sex kitten
Tom
era,
Hayden.
The Barbarella era. And Tom Hayden, who was a liberal activist, and she did the aerobics tape to raise money for their causes. So, you know, weirdly, you know, she did this thing that kind of looks superficial, but it was for this very, you know, she was really, at that point, a full-time activist. Then she goes to Ted Turner, which no one could figure out, and there are really touching interludes in the film where she and Ted get back together. They've never lost touch. They're still incredibly close. You can tell they just adore each other. It's very tender and very sweet. She thought she would never go back to acting at that point. She did, and like you said, she's had this incredible whatever it is.
She's funny. She makes
and
fun
she's
of
almost,
herself.
She's better than ever. And she told me, I said, you know, the one thing that we don't really learn about in this movie is your craft and how the technique has changed and how your approach to acting. She said that's the one thing that's hard to talk about. But she thinks she's gotten better. I do too, frankly. I've been watching a lot of Grace and Frankie, the Netflix show she does with Lily Tomlin. She's just brilliant in that. I mean, absolutely brilliant. She's doing comedy again, but it's coming from a very grounded, understated, nuanced place. It's just a joy. It's just fabulous to see.
You really are a fangirl, though, in that. I mean,
I am.
And
I mean, I,
that's
and, you
fine.
Know, and back to the Hanoi Jane thing,
yeah.
Mark, I mean, Mark Tony, you know, she has apologized for that. She understands exactly why that was wrong, and she understood it pretty early and has been very forthcoming about apologizing. And I just think that example is also admirable, you know, that she's been able to take responsibility for her missteps and be held accountable for them. And I think right now we're in an era when accountability matters more than ever, and I think she's a role model for that, too.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
That's
Tony.
Lovely. All right. We will talk to you next week, maybe. Yes?
You bet.
You'll have some movies. It's Anne Hornaday, Boys and Girls. Nigel, did you have a movie that you thought Anne wouldn't see? Life Itself?
Yeah, Life Itself with Oscar Isaac, Manny Patinkin, Olivia Wilde. It's about the connective tissue in our lives and how a bad thing can sometimes lead to a brilliant thing. One thing you might like about it, there's a lot of Bob Dylan references throughout it, and it's
well, didn't Chris Isaac basically play?
Llewellyn Davis,
right? It was not as good as Bob Dylan, and wondered what was going on when right. Bob Dylan took the
yes.
stage.
So there was that interesting twist to it. But yeah,
is it any good or does it stink?
It's interesting. It's
loves Olivia Wilde.
I am a big fan of Olivia Wilde, and she's terrific in this. But it's so unbelievably sad. You work towards this happy ending,
and
the joy at the end doesn't nearly pay off for the tragedy that you see early in the movie. So
fantastic review.
Sounds like a show.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with news. James Carville allegedly will join us. He missed us last week.
Yes.
If he tries to bet the Browns game, we're not going to allow that to happen, but we will talk to him when we return. And also, I'm using a pen, and I haven't mentioned this before. This is the Diego's Bail Bonds pen. Diego's Bail Bonds have asked to be the official bail bonds men or bail bonds people of this show, and they gave us some golf balls and some mugs and some hats, and I said sure. I hope never to have to use them, but if I do, me Diego's bail bonds.
Chico's bail bonds
was the most famous ever because of the movie.
Yeah. The Bad News Bears.
Diego's bail bonds. Did you have any need for them?
I've had need for them recently, so but I found somebody else.
All right, we will. As I say, Carville and News when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the 23andMe ad. It's a DNA testing service that can offer insights into your ancestry, health, wellness, and traits. The 23andMe Health and Ancestry service includes reports on how your DNA can influence your weight, your sleep quality, your caffeine intake, your sense of taste, whether you're likely to be lactose intolerant, and more. And it's easy to do. Here's the part that I always blanch at just a little bit. You simply spit into the tube provided in your 23andMe kit and mail your saliva sample back to the lab to be analyzed. And I guess it holds its quality when you do that. I would hope so. The bitter taste report and the sweet and salty reports, that you'll get an answer on that. DNA can play a role in determining your food preferences from sweet to salty to bitter. The deep sleep report tells you if you are more likely to be an especially deep sleeper. I don't really know what that means. The sleep movement report tells you how much you're likely to move during your sleep based on your DNA. There's another way to find out how much you're likely to move, like, you know, just put a pen on your leg and you can see what happens in the morning.
There you go.
The saturated fat and weight reports tells you based on your genetics how your weight might be affected by saturated fats in your diet. And it offers tips on which foods to watch out for if you're trying to eat less saturated fats. And as I often say, if you want to walk more, walk more.
Yes.
If you want to eat less saturated fats, just identify.
Eat less.
Anyway, the lactose intolerance report sheds insight into how your genetics may affect your ability to digest dairy products. So many people are lactose intolerant. I live with someone who's lactose intolerant, which means there's more ice cream for me. Order your 23andMe Health and Ancestry Service Kit at 23andMe.com/Tony. Now remember to use the numbers, 23andMe.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Again, this is Edgewater Avenue, a Delaware band. This is sent to us by James Johnson Jr., who has attached two tracks. The tracks can be found at www.edgewateravenue.bandcamp.com. They're proud to have been on the show before. Said, I wanted to email you about connective tissue as I perused some information in the Facebook. I saw our upcoming September 28th show at the resplendent Kelly's Logan House in Wilmington's Trolley Square will possibly be attended by none other than the famous Claire Natola.
Oh, how about that?
That's great.
That's fantastic.
This David Aldridge moment made me happy as I shouted, I know her, at my Google machine. We're very excited for the show. We would love Miss Natola to introduce herself with a TK salute and a hearty La Cheeserie. Also, tell Michael it's raining. It's not raining here right now, but it rained for an awfully long time. And if people, they're from Newport, Delaware, and if people want to, Michael, send in music like Edgewater Avenue, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to the show. Send it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And what are we selling today?
We still have the official Wine Tyrant Corkscrew and the Bottle Saver.
That's very, very good. And people should... That can't be a lot of money,
nope,
right?
Nope, it's a very low price point.
Yeah, it's very important for people to buy it. Oh, that's not really important.
Buy two or three.
Yeah. Give them out as gifts
exactly.
Halloween.
Right.
You put them in the little kids' Halloween... What is that, a pumpkin?
Yeah, a little pumpkin.
They hold a pumpkin basket. Put a corkscrew in there and see how that works. All right. James Carville joins us. Now, James missed us last week. James hit his college game when he started. but missed on the two pro games. What do you have for us this week?
I kind of like, let's talk about Georgia.
Georgia, okay.
Yeah, they're going over to Missouri. They're in Missouri. And they've land 14 points on the road.
Right.
And I'll lay the points and take the take the Georgia.
You like Georgia. You like Georgia. Do you like Alabama enough against a good team to lay like, is it 21?
There's only like 26.
27, yeah.
So many points. I would stay away from that game. I would.
I'm going to stay away from it.
I'm surprised because Georgia is one of those big public favorites this week. I thought you were going to go Missouri.
Georgia's good.
Yeah, they are good.
They're good. I mean, I didn't want to. I mean, I don't like giving up 14 points in the room. But they're good. And, you know, if we got to beat Louisiana Tech and we beat Ole Miss at home in Florida on the road, and we play Georgia on October 13th, that's going to be a monster game.
That's LSU.
It'll be a monster game, yes.
Okay. LSU, the quarterback wasn't good until he had to be good.
He's pretty good.
And then he was pretty good. That fourth down call, that was a big call, James. Did you go for that?
I did. And that guy, he started out pretty good and he got kind of medium. But in the last 7 minutes, he got really good.
He did. He did. What else you got for us?
Stanford and Oregon. Stanford goes to Oregon and Oregon's getting like a point and a half.
It's 2.5 is what I'm seeing currently.
Yeah, it's up to 2.5.
Okay. Yeah, let's take 2.5. Let's buy the hook and take 3.
So you're taking Oregon.
He likes Oregon at home.
I like Oregon.
Okay.
I like Oregon in that situation. And then Navy travels to SMU, and I think, what did you see, 6.5?
Yeah, five and a half.
Which side do you want?
I want it. I want to lay as few points as I can.
All right, well, we can lay 5.5.
Five and a half. All right, I'll take Navy.
That's Navy minus 5.5.
Right.
Okay.
And Oregon plus 2.5, and Georgia minus 14.
Okay, that's good. College is. I like when you bet college games. I do.
Yeah. I don't. You know, the NFL is the kind of. Last night I forgot about the Browns and the Jets. Just forgot about it.
Yeah.
You know, it never happens to me. And then 1 o'clock this morning, the Browns finally won a game.
Well, you missed something. Actually, you missed something pretty good because Baker Mayfield came in at the end of the first half and he was very good. He was very good.
Really?
Yeah, he was really good.
Did you? Tonight.
Hmm?
I was on World Side tonight.
Did you see the fight?
I did not see the fight. Wilbon said it was one of the five greatest fights he's ever seen.
Well, I used to disagree with everything Wilbon says, but he happens to be right there. I think it was that good.
And there'll be a third.
I had LSU Auburn game and the fight.
LSU Auburn game was very good. Right, James'
LSU
phone
Auburn is
good,
unfortunately. Yeah.
Thank you, James. James's phone is. It's
that was tough.
It's a shame because I was going to try to interest him in some UL Lafayette action.
Yeah. I saw that Charlotte UMass game on the board, and I figured he'd definitely be betting that.
He bets college games that no one.
He'll go
bets
deep in the card.
That nobody has ever heard.
So Wilbon said that fight was one of the best
five greatest fights he's ever seen.
Not
I've never heard anyone say the fight was bad, and it's going to be a huge uproar for a third fight.
I've heard that the fight was great, but a top five fight of all time. Wow,
that's what he said. Yeah. All right.
Watch it on Netflix.
I did have news. And before I get to that, I do want to say what the name of the song was by Edgewater Avenue. I forgot to tell that to you. It's The Devil, the Midwest, and Me, which is a lovely, lovely song.
And I was wrong about Flacco. He's from New Jersey. A friend of mine watching on News Channel 8 said it's Valerie Bertinelli that I was thinking of. She's from Wilmington, Delaware.
No, right. She's not.
Yes, she is. She was born in Wilmington,
she
Delaware.
She grew up in Louisiana.
But she was born in Wilmington, Delaware.
Well, so that counts for you if you grew up.
Well, he apparently said that she was born. That's who I was confused with.
Elena Deladon was born in Wilmington,
yes,
Delaware.
Well, she went to Delaware too.
She did,
yeah.
But first she went to Connecticut, and then she went home. She didn't like Connecticut. Go ahead.
Yeah, but is Connecticut really a good college basketball?
No, she missed.
School?
She has a. There's a situation
no,
in
know,
her life with her sister.
Yes,
and she wanted to be close to her sister. Her sister has compounded disabilities, and Elena Deladon could not bear it. Was
yes.
It's wonderful.
Yes,
wonderful.
We'll start off with golf, Mr. Tony. Week away from the Ryder Cup, Tiger Woods, who is going to be on that Ryder Cup team, making a strong statement, opening with a 65 at the Tour
Eagles
Championship.
18.
Eagles 18, tied for the lead with Ricky Fowler.
Okay, so I will point out it's only Thursday when he had that round.
It almost feels like it was 2 weeks ago.
And there's four rounds still in a golf tournament. Even in a limited field golf tournament of 30 people, there's still four rounds. But Michael, what is your assessment of that?
This is the realization of his comeback. You're seeing it in this run-up through the playoffs. Some people might want to throw away these opening rounds, but he even said yesterday that this was a much bigger round for him than the 8-under at Aronimink, which played soft, and you could really just throw darts. He was missing when he missed fairways and when he missed greens. He was missing in ways which gave him angles to get to the hole so he could manage his mistakes. My worry would be he had three or four birdie putts that were in that makeable range, 15 feet and under, that he just didn't really have a chance on. And these greens they're pretty slick, so they're really exacting, but you have to feel very confident seeing that 65. And it also means he's managing the body, which we are a little bit worried about, the fatigue that comes at this time of the year as well.
This is Tiger Woods has been playing golf for less than one calendar year now. He started out, he hadn't played in forever. He started out ranked in the 600s in the world. The fact that he even made East Lake is remarkable. Now he's ahead in this tournament. If he were to win this tournament, I don't care about any of those other permutations about how other people ahead of him could win the $10 million. Just give him the money. Give it to him in cash. Throw him hundreds.
Doesn't really
stacks
need it.
Well, it helps.
Hundreds.
It helps that DeChambeau is near the bottom.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought your subpar newsman was going to get to that. That's a bigger part of the story because DeChambeau, if he finishes, I think, 15th or worse, Tiger could actually win the whole thing.
Yeah, but keep in mind.
You didn't really think that Nigel would go that deep in golf.
No.
Kevin, can you just check your microphone real quick? There you go. I think you fixed it right now.
What else?
Vontae Davis, Mr. Tony. He's speaking out, sort of explaining why he quit. Talked about getting ready for the game. Everything was normal. And then he was out in the field.
He talked to Dominique Foxworth, who was himself a former NFL player. Yeah.
Terp.
Former Terp.
Yeah, and played that position, right?
Yes.
DB, go ahead.
And basically said at some point in the field, he said, I knew I shouldn't be out there. Went and told one of his coaches, John Butler, says, I'm done. They put another guy out there for the last couple of plays before the half, and he just said, look, I know people aren't going to understand. I don't really care. I did this for me. I left everything on the field, and I just realized at that moment I shouldn't be out there. Texted his wife, texted his brother, and said at the end, look, it was therapeutic for me. And,
well, good for you.
Yeah.
You have a commitment to the other people on the team. This is a team sport.
Yes.
This isn't golf or tennis.
Well, he doesn't have a commitment now because he's not on the team.
He just quit.
Just seems so weird.
I think that even people who like Vontae Davis would say, I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Can't you just finish out the game?
Finish it out in the locker room. Say I'm hurt. You know, my knee hurts. Oh, my arm. Say something like that.
Oh, my arm. It's broken.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown also talking.
This guy.
He said, addressed the media yesterday and said, you guys don't know me at all. You guys just write what you think you're going to hit. Everyone in this locker room knows what I stand for, knows what I'm about. I'm committed to this program and this organization, and this is what I know you love.
Here is the line. This is the best line. I think I lead by example. I come to work every day. Well, you didn't come to work Monday.
Right.
You didn't come to work. That's why we're having this conversation.
Right.
Because you didn't come to work Monday. And then he said, well, that was personal. You know, okay. And he said the coach knows. Well, the coach knows now.
Well, he does now.
The coach says, you can't say I come to work every day when you just missed Monday.
Yes.
You can't.
Seems a bit odd.
That team's got a chance to blow up.
Monday night.
Yeah, they're playing at Tampa.
They got a chance to blow up, right?
It looks like it.
Yeah. Freeman wrote a piece for Bleacher Report earlier this week about how Tomlin has essentially lost that locker room, and it's...
Well, that's a Terry Bradshaw. Bradshaw's position is Tomlin's no good. I've always liked Tomlin. What else you got?
The NHL has suspended Max Domi of the Canadiens for the rest of the preseason after a sucker punch on Florida's Aaron Ekblad on Wednesday night.
Okay, so Max Domi is the son of Ty Domi. Ty Domi, for years, made a living with the Rangers beating people up.
Yes, that was
that
his
was
deal.
His job. Now, he was you can't get to the NHL just being a fighter. You know, they're not giving you the roster spot. I mean, he was a fine
hockey
player,
too.
Got to
be able to skate.
You got to be able to do these things. To do this in an exhibition game, the Ekblad didn't want to fight. He didn't want to fight. It was clear. Fighters should only be allowed to fight fighters. They shouldn't be allowed to. He punches him three or four times right in the face. It's just, you shouldn't be allowed to do this. And then he misses the exhibition season. Who cares about the exhibition season? Yeah. He should get five games, the first five games of the regular season. The NHL should say, this is not what we want. We're okay with fighting between two people who are willing to fight, but we don't want this. We still want this. I mean, and I don't know how good Ekblad is, but Gretzky didn't fight. But if you touched Gretzky, eight guys.
Someone was going to get you.
Eight guys got you.
Now, back then, you didn't need to skate. I mean, they had actual goons.
Yeah, but I don't
now know. Everyone can play.
I'm not happy with that. What else you got? Got anything?
Did you want to talk about the Supreme Court stuff?
No, I want to talk about that in Olga.
That, and probably more complicated than I can handle. I think we'd all agree about that. Then I will tell you this one story.
Well, can we ask Kevin about weather?
Sure.
Are we into the
whether or not he's got a job?
I just saw Kevin has a podcast.
Yep, KevinSheehanShow.com and on iTunes.
So, whether or not he's got a Kevin, job, as I said.
I just saw Chuck Bell.
Oh, boy.
He, like, starting Sunday, it's like 6 days in a row of rain again.
Well, but cool temperatures. Not as muggy, but a lot of rain.
Rain.
Starting late Sunday after the game.
How much rain? Oh, no, it's not
going to
be.
It looks like it'll be after the game. So those of you thinking about going, the few of you that are thinking about going to the game.
The 30,000.
The weather won't be an issue during the game. It doesn't look like.
Right.
What do you want to know? A lot of rain. We've had a very rainy summer and now fall. Early fall.
So what will happen?
If this
continues.
Does this
mean there'll be a lot of snow?
If this continues, the combined precipitation and cold weather would mean what?
Snow.
Potentially.
What are you seeing?
We're going to let it play out and see what happens.
Well, you had Sue Palka on your show last week.
Sue's a little bit bullish on the winter here. She thinks there could be a lot of snow.
I hate snow.
Above average. And she's the best meteorologist in town.
I hate snow.
One of my best and favorite colleagues.
Do you have an explanation for why we're having all this rain?
Well, of course. It's a La Nina situation.
Which is Spanish for the Niña.
It's the Niña.
We've had La Niña before.
I don't get ready for the NAO. I'm not an expert on summer and fall weather.
Only winter.
I'm a winter weather expert. That's my gig. That's my niche.
So cooperative. It's amazing.
Kevin
it couldn't
Sheehan,
hold work.
WWE. E. Winter weather expert.
That's what I held the symposium on.
Now we'll take a break. When we come back, what do we have? When we have Olguy when we return?
That's right.
We will talk about the Supreme Court, and we will talk about whatever anybody wants to talk about. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the First Leaf ad. I fully and completely endorse First Leaf.
Yes, you love it.
I give Michael, when Michael buys me the wine, I give Michael my notes on the wines.
And I rate them online for
And you. He rates them online. Everybody knows that person who hypes up their bottle of wine. They get you excited with a fancy French name. But when you actually try it, you want to say, you paid what for that? Friends, don't let friends go broke on overpriced wine with First Leaf. There's a better way to discover the wines you like most. First Leaf has created a club experience customized to you down to an individual level. By rating the wines you receive, First Leaf determines your likes and dislikes, and using a custom algorithm and wine concierge team only sends wines that you will love. I got started with First Leaf because Michael answered some questions for me and gave my wine preferences, which are, as I've said before, ranked in order, red, red, and red. First Leaf created an introductory three-pack of wines based on my flavor profile. The best part was I got all three for just $5 each. And these wines should go for about $20 each. When my bottles arrived, I tasted them. I rated them online, or Michael did. First Leaf took my ratings and selected new wines based on my taste for my next shipment. The shipments only get better the more wines I rate. So try First Leaf Wine Club today, where buying great wine is simple. Sign up with my personal link and you'll get an exclusive introductory offer. It's three bottles of wine for only $15 plus free shipping. And that's not all. If you rate these three wines, which you should do, it's not that hard.
Right.
I assume, because I don't do it, but Michael does.
Well, you can't do it.
You get
it's a thumbs up or thumbs down situation.
Right.
You write detailed notes that I just discard.
Okay, well, that's great. But if you rate the wines or get someone to rate the wines for you, a child or someone, you'll get an extra $10 off your next box. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/Tony. That's tryfirstleaf/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Olguy Radio for the day. These are the Eagles. We're playing the Eagles because Don Felder's birthday is today.
Yes, I believe he's 71 today.
71 years old. This is Lion Eyes. This was the first hit. This is, I don't know about you, but the first 5 seconds of this song when I heard it, I said, wow. I mean, this is a great, great tune. What do you got for
Don Felder actually plays acoustic on this. He wasn't a full member of the band yet. Bernie Ledden was still there, but then Bernie Ledden left, and Don Felder
joined in full force later on after that. This song, the title and idea for the song came when Glenn Frey and Don Henley were in their favorite L.A. restaurant bar, a place called Dantana's.
Oh, sure.
Which was frequented by many beautiful women. They started about all the beautiful women who were cheating on their husbands, and they saw a beautiful young woman with a fat and much older wealthy man, and Frey said, she can't even hide those lion eyes.
And 10 seconds later, they sat down and they wrote this song, and the rest is history.
And for those that don't know this, there is a documentary on the Eagles.
Two parts.
And I would recommend it for many reasons, but most specifically so that you can see the video of the almost brawl on stage between Felder and Glenn Frey.
Frey came off in that documentary.
Gangster. Gangster. Yes. He was the executive producer of it. He had final cut on that. So he came off exactly how he wanted to.
Yeah.
He and Henley. There's no question about that. It's today, Kevin, I don't know if you would know this. You're more a weatherman than a meteor guy, right?
Like, well, he's a winter weather
expert. Is this an astronomy question you're about to ask?
Isn't today September 21st, isn't this the day of the autumnal equinox?
It is.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong on this, doesn't that...
It's actually autumnal mead, I think.
Yes. Doesn't that mean that we are supposed to have an equal amount of light and dark today?
50-50.
Correct.
And so
50-50.
But is that in fact the case? Because last night there was still light in the sky till about 7:15 or 7:20, and there's light in the sky. It's not the sunset or sunrise. You keep raising your hand.
Nigel, what is it?
Once again, you're agitated.
Once again, Kip has gotten it wrong. I just want to correct it.
I'm just nodding over here.
The autumnal equinox is tomorrow at 9:54 p.m.
That's what we meant.
Okay, but I'm trying to get to the essence of it. That the essence of it is
equal light, equal dark.
And yet, it seems there's a little more light than dark, or doesn't?
Are you measuring?
Well,
are you clocking it?
Well, I'm in the backyard playing the frisbee game with Chessie at about 6:40 because there's a little bit of light, and there's still a little bit of light at about 7:15 at night. But maybe that has to do with sunrise and sunset and not light and dark.
Right.
That's what I'm asking you.
Well, it would be 12 hours of light, and with Gary's math, about 12 and a half hours of dark.
Stalling.
Right. Unless you're actually putting a stopwatch to it, I would suggest that just follow whatever it is that they say it was, which was equal light and dark.
Well, you're in the city.
This
but
is
you
a have, depressing
you have residual
day.
Light.
Yes, and we lose
this
light.
This is depressing.
This time of year, we lose light more rapidly than any other day. So, like, today you lose, like, two minutes and 20 seconds.
You didn't know that before.
This is very depressing. What is most depressing, and there is debate about this, on December 21st, which is the official date of winter, you have the smallest amount, the smallest amount of light. Some people think that's great because it only goes up from there. I think it stinks.
Yes.
And I think the next month is awful. Like,
well, because it's usually very cold, too.
It's cold, and now you say it's going to snow.
And it's still getting dark early, and we're going to have a lot of snow this winter.
And there's no, and there's no light till 8 o'clock in the morning.
5P sunsets. Those are soul-crushing.
That stinks. What else did I write down? Oh, so I think it's tonight. It might have been last night, but I think it's tonight. Wilbon and I, a few months ago, were invited to host the Dan Jenkins Medal Award in Austin, Texas. Dan Jenkins, for people who don't know, was and is, because he's now a mad tweeter. Dan Jenkins is Sally Jenkins' dad. Dan Jenkins, one of the first sports writers to ever just blow up in terms of writing and have movies done of his books, like Semi-Tough and things like that. I love Dan Jenkins. And the University of Texas, where he didn't go to school, he went to TCU. He didn't go to school at Texas. He went to TCU. But the University of Texas has established this award. And this is the second year they've given it out. Last year they gave it posthumously to Frank DeFord as lifetime achievement for sports writing. And Dave Kindred, who Wilbon and I worked with for years at the Washington Post, won the award this year. And Sally called and she said, would you emcee the event? And I said, no. I mean, I'm not going. I don't want to go. I don't really want to go. But I said, but I would be happy to make a tape. So she got Mary Carrillo. And Mary's great. And she got Mary to emcee the award. And I hope people laugh. I, of course, insult Dan not as much as I wanted to when my friend David said, Dan's going to be very angry if you do this. I said, okay, I didn't want that to happen. Michael, you love Dan, right? Because he still tweets
love
like
his work.
Crazy. He was older Bush, his favorite writer. And used to play golf with him and was invited up to
play
Camp
golf
David.
With the president.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a nice thing.
Yeah,
and
that.
Kindred, I just at one point I said of Kindred, because I just say yeah, and Wilbon says, "Is that it?" Yeah, I said, "Well, it was all right." It was all right. And then I say, "Look, I'm tired of him winning these awards. I mean, we should be." I said, "We have Emmys. Kindred has no Emmys." And Wilbon points out, because I've written all these things, I know this. Wilbon points out, well, it's a writing award. And I said, really, who does Kindred write for now? Golf Quarterly? Bon Appetit? I mean, stop. Really, stop. We should have this award. He comes from a hick town, for God's sakes. You know, enough with Kindred. And then he writes, then Wilbon says, Wilbon, he's got the great speech. You know, he did. Kindred showed up in locker rooms, and Kindred did every sport, and Kindred went everywhere, and Kindred, you know, when he was wrong, and it's this beautiful 8 or 9 lines about how great Kindred is. And at the end, Wilbon says, I named my son after him. I said, no, you named your son Matthew. He says, okay, but the rest of it, I got the rest of it right, right? And then I say, look, I can't bear the thought of Sally winning this award before us. And that's the end of the thing, which I think is funny. So I'm hoping it goes over well. It's a beautiful, the website. Have you gotten
yes,
seen the website?
Yes, I've been looking through the website. I would have loved to take the trip to Austin. Any mention of Kindred's holiday card?
Oh, no, I had forgotten all about that. Kindred writes one of those great Hollywood cards that holiday cards that catches you up on everything in the entire family for a year.
Well, it sounds like you emceed the event without the flight.
Well, it's only a couple of minutes, but I'm hoping it's good. Now, if we get booed off the stage,
Dan
stands up and shakes something at the screen, you know, I don't know. But I was happy to do it. I was happy to do it. All right, let's get to the once again. Dr. Blasey Ford has now said through her attorneys she will testify, but she's not testifying Monday, like Thursday at the earliest. I mean, I think we're involved now in chicken. I think we're involved in this is what's going on. The longer this lasts, I think the worse it is for Brett Kavanaugh. That's me personally. You guys may have other opinions about this. There's a Wall Street Journal poll out now that says that 38% of the people disapprove of his nomination, 34% approve. That leaves a large
undecided
area of people who didn't respond, because that's only 72. That leaves 28%,
right.
And you don't know how they would break down. But we talk about this and talk about, and not just us. This is the lead story every single day on the news. And I mean, if she presents herself as credible, and I believe she will, that the dicey part here is now. I think they're going to go away from senators. I think Republican male senators don't want to be in a position of antagonistically asking questions of this woman. And so I think they will try and get a prosecutorial lawyer who is female. I believe that's what they'll try and do, to try and soften that. And I wonder where, we talk about it a lot, but does your mind change every day? How does this work for you?
I definitely vacillate a little bit. It's difficult to separate what appears to be political versus what would seem completely reasonable. It's difficult to reconcile what anyone would do. I mean, I have heard and read many say, if you were completely innocent of these accusations,
would you welcome
an FBI
investigation? You would say, get the FBI in here.
And you may or may not. I mean, if you were Brett Kavanaugh and you wanted this appointment, you would not want to prolong it because for the very obvious political reasons. So but at the same time, because everything that Dr. Ford's attorneys ask for seems to prolong it, doesn't necessarily mean that they are simply trying to delay it. I mean, it's reasonable that in an effort to get justice or to be properly heard. I certainly am willing to believe she fears for her life. I'm sure she has had terrible threats against
her. I believe she has to
her.
Do this publicly and not in closed session.
Has to.
But I think we're at that point.
And the fact that she, this sort of latest development that is being reported, that they have requested that she be interviewed only by senators and not by independent counsel.
Because that's going to look better for her.
Right.
Because they're not going to look good doing
it. But that looks extremely political.
This is totally political. By the way, there was a great story yesterday in the Washington Post by someone named Joe Heim about the culture of Georgetown Prep and Holton Arms and these variety of private schools in the Washington, D.C.
Private schools turn in the box, isn't
it? And it really was a really good story, a really good piece.
Well, a lot of that stuff in the 80s, because I was around here in the 80s, was happening in public school, too. A lot of it.
And I think that's important to say.
Yeah.
Now, you're the same age as Brett Kavanaugh.
I am.
Yeah. Did you know him?
I don't know him well. Successful. I mean, I certainly know him a little bit, and I have friends that are very close with him. Yeah. But quick question for you, because I need an update on the story. Your newsman didn't give it. Is she demanding an investigation still or not? What is her position on the investigation?
The words are not demanding. The words are she strongly would hope to have this, but she has not made it conditional for her testimony. What? They're going back and forth. They're in now negotiations. I think at this point, everybody's in too deep not to have this.
Right.
Don't we agree this is going to happen?
One thing to refer back to a point you made earlier.
And by the way, it will be the highest rated
news
television show in years and years and years.
One thing that she would like is she doesn't want lawyers doing any of the questioning. She just wants senators. And you'd said Republicans probably would want a female prosecutor.
Did we not do this 30 seconds?
Yes. There's an echo in here.
Yes. What?
No, she would want that.
I know we...
Sorry.
When you bring up these approval numbers, I just worry that no matter what is revealed through this process, that it's not going to change any of the opinions of those who have already made up their mind. And so then what is the purpose of putting these families, putting this potential victim through this experience? And I don't know how the committee lost the situation just so completely in such a short period of time. And I don't know if there's a way they can regain control.
They lost it because of the political climate in which we live, which is very localized in the last X amount of years, your first reaction is antagonism towards everything that is said and to stonewall everything that anyone else says. And we lost it because we live in what is called the silo mentality. Yeah. Nobody reaches out to anyone. They say they do. That's why I think that it's possible that independent candidates might actually win every once in a while, or reformer candidates, not political reformers, people that say, this is garbage, and we can't have this. We have to go beyond this. But I don't know if that's going to happen.
Well, it is a shame that the current climate, and maybe this is just a DC thing, but it probably extends across the country, is that you simply can't have an opinion about anything anymore without someone ascribing some political affiliation to it. I mean, if you are a conservative Republican, you're not allowed to admit that you think the Nike ad is a good or effective ad. If you say that you like the Nike ad, it's immediately assumed you're a snowflake and you hate America. You know, And this is that on steroids, of course, this issue. So
you'll be dealing with this on your podcast today.
A little bit later on. Okay, yeah, probably the Saturday podcast.
Yeah, okay. All right, so I'm going to get out on that. I have a sad note, and I know this would affect you, Kevin, personally, because you're a Maryland guy. Jack Zane passed away. He was
great
the longtime SID. Wilbon and Junior, both Wilbon and Junior, do dead-on impersonations of Jack Zane, which I can't do. But they always involve, you can talk to him inside the locker room or outside. Can you do Zane?
I can't do Zane.
And he was, for many, many years, the face of Maryland Athletics.
Yeah.
As the SID and led all
press
Well,
you
all
know
press
I don't
conference.
Know. I love Jack.
Yeah, that's
Loved
right.
him.
Yeah, a lefty. Yeah, yeah sure. So we attention must be paid. We'll get out of here. We'll come back with... email. Are we capable of doing the email?
We found a way to print.
So we have email and a jingle. And who told me? Somebody stopped me on the street yesterday and said, am I still a little if I hate the jingles? And I said, yeah, sure. And he goes, well, I hate the jingles. And okay. I go, well, I'm sorry.
Okay.
He says, well, I like the music. I hate the jingles. And I said, you know, this stuff I hate too, but it doesn't mean I hate everything about it. Not everything. So we'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Press record. All right. Now I'm going to sing. So now I'm going to sing a song. It's a live jingle, a real important one. But I've got no experience to draw upon. I'd regale you with some lyrics about a wonderful story. Without first-hand history, it would go rather poorly. And now KJ can take over and sing something funny.
Wait a minute. Is
Is this how podcasters make all their money?
It's the chorus. Now I'm singing about doing live reads. I sing the words and the hook from your Google machine. If I keep singing, will I get funded by underwear, razors, and seeds? Build a course. Do they pay for jingles about live reads? I'm singing a jingle about live reads. I'm repeating these words again because they're important. I'm singing a jingle about live reads. I'm playing the same chords over and over. I bet you didn't notice unless you were paying attention.
Ooh, that's falsetto.
Jason Fuse. Jason Fuse with a guest shot by Kirsten Ohnstedt.
Needs to spell out the call to action.
Yeah. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Ann Hornaday and James Carville. Let's get Carville a better phone. I'd like to thank today's sponsors, First Leaf Wines, 23andMe, and Indochino. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. That was handwritten very nicely. Let's get to some of these things from Garrett Smith in Utah. By the way, we have somebody from Ireland here today.
Oh, about that?
And we have a bachelor party in here today.
Whoa. Oh, wow.
One of the bachelors
geeky
is marrying Brittany. Perhaps, if she doesn't
we'll see how it goes.
Bail out. From Garrett Smith in Utah. Catching up on the pod and being exposed to a variety of eating habits, I thought I would share one of my own. When eating chips, take the classic Dorito, for example. I will pull two chips at a time and compare the amount of flavor on each chip. Once a loser is determined, it will be consumed like the Saliza it is. Working through the bag until the ultimate winner is determined, it is the best way to save the best for last. You're welcome. From Chris Walker. The week began with a woman to whom I'm related by mortgage and marriage going into her 40th week of gestation. At the same juncture, said woman, by virtue of her 1%er status at a not-to-be-named casino, was comped two Emmy tickets and, more importantly, Uncle Tony, parking. We missed Luke in a La Cheeserie shout-out opportunity, but did see PTI fan and new EGOT club member John Legend. Like you, we waited for the funny and or controversial at least to arrive, and it never did. Speaking of arrivals, fortunately for our date last night for the foreseeable future, our new addition found it in our heart not to arrive during the show. Allow me to introduce Amelia Grace Walker, born at 2:29 p.m. on the 19th of September at Huntington Hospital, Pasadena, California, 19 inches, 7 pounds, 15 ounces. Mom and baby are well. I give this email a Blutarski GPA chance of redeeming the Emmys, but great week for a little. Thanks to yourself and the crew for years of entertainment. And there are pictures of this.
Congratulations.
I felt the Emmys were awful. As I said, just absolutely god awful. This is, the forward line is Jeff Ma picks the Jets. And it just says, poor Jeff Ma, so close. And this is from D.A. La Pomeray, and he was close because it was 4.
Yeah,
but he was 3. He got the 3, and
it didn't
work.
Got it wrong.
Still
from
a loss.
Cuthbert Hutton, yes, it is in St. Petersburg, Florida. Just wanted to give you a heads up. I just saw my first TK sticker in the 5+ years I've been listening. I'd never seen one, and I was worried your constant haranguing of the Sunshine State meant there were no other Littles here. But at 7:30 this morning, driving east on Gandy Boulevard in Tampa, I saw a TK sticker on the car in front of me. Admittedly, I was too bashful to offer a salute, but if the driver of a white Mitsubishi with the plate NOLA up is listening, eat it. NOLA up, New Orleans, Louisiana, right? Yeah. I assume it's not Aaron NOLA, unless that was Aaron NOLA, somebody in his family.
That was actually Aaron NOLA, yes.
From Jolene Wojcik. It's a correction for Nigel. It's not a paper called Uranus in Cincinnati. It's a small town in Missouri, and it's called the Uranus Examiner, which is even funnier. Here are a couple of lines from the AP story on the launch of the paper. The new publication's editor, Natalie Sanders, led the Daily Guide before leaving in June to start what she calls a fun paper that will include local news and promote the tourist town of Uranus, which is pronounced the way any self-respecting class clown would say it. Uranus sits along historic Route 66 and is known for its quirky attractions, including a fudge shop and the world's largest belt buckle. The mayor of a nearby town is against the name, as she believes the publication's new name will bring public ridicule. Or it may bring a smile to everyone's face except Wilbon. It's going to bring a smile. It's not going to bring public ridicule. From Brandon Minich in Frederick, Maryland. I'm so glad you have 23andMe as a sponsor. I feel that this is where the fellow who has to carry the urine samples around has ended up working. From Matthew Benz. I'll be on hand for the Ryder Cup next Saturday outside Paris at Le Golf National, which of course means the Golf National. What do I have to do to become the official 2018 Ryder Cup correspondent of the Tony Kornheiser Show? I'll hang up and wait to get bonked on the head by an errant shot. And listen, just write us every day. Just let us know what it was like.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
And just if you see Sans.
Find Sansy.
Yeah, find Sansy and say La Cheeserie. That's what you have to do. From Ian Kilby, the subject is the Browns. The rare post-week three palindrome record of 1-1-1. That's right.
Yeah.
And it is very, very rare. Things are looking up for the Browns, aren't they?
Yes.
Well, surely.
How many are they going to win? How many are they going to win this year?
Six.
At least one.
Six?
Ooh, six is high. I'll go five.
Four.
Six seems high.
Yeah.
I mean, they could easily beat three.
They
barely beat a bad team at home. Yeah. I think they got, maybe they've got their win. I don't.
You
subject
can check
of
with
Browns
Jeff
win. From Ray Shively or Shively in North Olmsted, Ohio. Please welcome all the many Cleveland Littles to the era of unbridled optimism. It worked out so great for DC fans. For seven games, it did. Unbridled optimism. You should have that now. You shouldn't be thinking anything else. You got the number one guy, Baker Mayfield. You should be happy. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I have a piano.
Thank you.
Empty space I can take, but not that look on your face. I'm trying to find the words that I can say. In the end, it's always the same. If I could write you a love song, nothing ever would go wrong. If I could write you a love song, I could keep you safe from harm. If I could write you a love song, things would never end like this, but I'd still be alone tonight. Yes, some people do change. You're no good for me, and I'm no good at all. Your cigarette's in my ashtray. Another night, and everything's always the same. If I could write you a love song, nothing ever would go wrong. If I could write you a love song, I would keep you safe from harm. If I could write you a love song, things would never end like this, but I'd still be alone tonight. If I could dim the moon and hide my eyes, would never have to say goodbye. If I could just be still for a little while, never ever leave my side. And if I could, I'd do it all for you. I'll try as long as you want me to. If I could write you a love song, if I could write you a love song, write you a love song, nothing ever would go wrong. If I could write you a love song, I could keep you safe from harm. If I could write you a love song, things would never end like this, but I'm always alone at night. Started out Houston, headed home to St. Paul. This lonely, dusty road is all I've known. But my truck broke down in Tulsa, now I'm in this motel, with whiskey and beer just sitting all alone. When I finally find a way to get back where I started, I'll try to find a place to settle down. When I lose everything I thought was so important, maybe I'll try and put some roots down in the ground. And I'll stop trying to outrun the devil in my dreams. Moving on to Kansas City, Lincoln and Sioux Falls. I don't know why, but I just can't get off this road. The girl I left behind in Houston, well, her dad says she ain't home. She left me high and dry, now she won't pick up the phone. Devil in my